Welcome, everyone, to the Justin Ryan Bizarro Show. I'm Justin Bizarro. I'm your host. That's B-I-Z-Z-A-R-R-O. For anyone who's out there, you can find me on Instagram at Justin Bizarro. And you can find this show or any of the other shows I do on Spotify. Just type in my last name. Like I said, B-I-Z-Z-A-R-R-O. They will all show up on anywhere you listen to podcasts and grow from them. So that being said, I have Noble Gray with us from Los Angeles, California. How are you doing today, Noble?
Doing fantastic. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to give the audience a tap in, I talk about it a lot on my shows and what we're trying to do in developing Foodtopia, the TV show, Eat, Love, Learn. And we are in development and trying to get it out there and trying to get it viewed by the audiences out there. And so we're in the very beginning of development stage. Things are going well. But Noble is one of the catalysts who's been along for this ride since the very beginning, since we started this journey back in January. It's hard to believe it's already been that long. But I guess all things come to those who wait and consistently have discipline to see them through. So Noble, how are you doing today?
Today's a good day. That's it's another good day. I'm alive and breathing. And everything's functioning, and yeah, the weather's good.
Yeah, that's nice awesome weather. So Noble, let's talk to me about your story. You're in film and TV. You've been in it. I know that you know Steven. That's how I met you. Been introduced to you. You guys went to school together, I believe, out there in Los Angeles. But let's talk about your background. Where'd you grow up? How'd you grow up? What was it like? And how'd you get into film and cinematography?
Yeah, so I'm from Los Angeles, California, born and raised. Spent most of my life in the west of Los Angeles, like pretty much Culver City. Grew up with two siblings in the home, and along with my mom. So I have a younger sister and an older brother in the home with me. I have an older sister who has a different mother, same dad, but we didn't grow up together. She's a lot older than I am. But yeah, me, my brother, and my sister, and my mom were together for quite a number of years. And we grew up like watching a lot of movies all the time. Like we were Disney kids, you could say. So we would be watching a lot of
a lot of
Disney videotapes and stuff, and
yep, stack up those videos. I love this. I love it. So true.
Yeah, we had a whole thing where we would just store them, and we would just cycle through our favorites. We didn't watch all of them because, you know, not each one appealed to us in quite the same way, but. But we had our few that we would like watch pretty frequently. But anyway, like watching these videotapes for me would always be like going on a journey. And I would be like, okay, what journey do I want to go on today? Do I want to go on the Robin Hood journey? Do I want to go on the Aladdin journey? Do I want to go on whatever else, like fill in the blank, your favorite Disney animated film? And getting to actually go on the journey meant that I got to escape from my world and go into another world. And for a kid, where your imagination just kind of runs wild and you play make believe and you pretend like you're different people and different characters, that's kind of the connection. That was kind of the connection for me, is that I would be able to sort of get into the world of these different characters and experience life the way they experience life. And that is what kind of stimulated my desire to be an actor, which I still have to this day. But what it also did was spark my creativity in sort of a visual way, because I've always been into like drawing and doodling, and watching animated films. I'm like, wow, it's amazing how you can actually put pen to paper and create, you know, these experiences that audiences can just get enraptured in. So I kind of grew up with this desire to be an actor as well as create visuals. So fast forward to high school, I was able to be in theater. So I did quite a few plays and musicals. And I was also in the filmmaking program. We were actually making short films. So I was able to make like 3-4 short films in high school. Wrote them myself, directed them, shot them myself, edited them myself. And that was just the most exhilarating process for me.
I'm kind of jealous, dude. That sounds incredible. I mean, I had a great experience in high school, don't get me wrong, but that's an incredible experience.
Yeah, to get to do both at the same time, to get to, like, I guess, connect with those different parts of yourself where you need that creative outlet. I was quite introverted, right? Didn't have a ton of friends. I was not the popular kid. So getting to be on stage and getting to delve inside of myself, inside of my own heart, inside of my own mind, inside of my own creativity, to also create these little masterpieces, which I would never show anyone those to this day. But at the time, I'm like, these are masterpieces, was the outlet that I needed to really, you know, I guess, have something to anchor myself down. You know what I'm saying? So at the end of high school, I was in a feature film. It was actually my high school film teacher's feature film. She knew that I was an actor, so she actually cast me in her film. That was the summer after I graduated high school. And then after, you know, in the fall, I was on my way to film school in Los Angeles, the San Fernando Valley. And yeah, that's where I met Steven. And in film school, my emphasis was cinematography. That was within the cinema program. And I got to work on a ton of student films. And I even was able to take some acting electives during that process as well. So ever since then, I will say that my career has been dominated by cinematography and camera stuff. And I haven't been able to pursue acting. But eventually I'll start making steps toward that again. But yeah, I did develop that love for cinematography. And over the years, the various skills that one would need to work in a number of genres and a number of platforms. So yeah, I think that's my sort of creative life encapsulated as much as I possibly could.
Yeah, I love it. And I'm going to get on back to some of the things you said, but I want to ask this first, like, why go first into the camera, or is that the thing that stuck the most? Because I mean, you went from being an actor in a feature film, which I got to imagine you weren't behind the camera, to now being someone who, I mean, I'm amazed by what you guys do. Like, it never occurred to me, like, the lighting, the different types of cameras, the different types of way they film, like, the knowledge and the expertise of the technology alone. I mean, I think everyone thinks, oh, they're just a person behind the camera, but it's way, 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 way more than that. Let's talk about that a little bit, because I think anyone in the audience who's not from, you know, the film or TV background has no idea how complicated this is. So let's talk about sort of the complication, like what it takes to actually be a cinematographer.
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say this. First of all, defining what cinematography is. Cinematography is what's responsible for, like, the visuals in your TV shows, your films, your commercials, and anything that you watch. That's you know, professional. Took a professional cinematographer to make that happen. And what cinematography is, it's utilizing camera movement and lighting primarily in order to further the storytelling. So, for example, I'm going to move the camera in this way, and I'm going to create lighting in the scene that looks like this in order to make the audience feel something emotionally or think something about the character. The way that I approach it is from a very like visceral standpoint and kind of nudging the audience in a particular direction based on where we're at in the storytelling in order to connect with the characters that they're watching and the worlds that they're in a particular way to create a certain experience for the audience. So with that being said, that sounds super artistic, and it is, but the other side of that is the very, very technical side, which you mentioned. So yes, you have to know your cameras, you have to know your lenses, and you have to know your lights and what can be done. And yeah, it does get super sort of technical, and it's one of those things where I've always believed that the more technical minded that I could be, the more I know, then the more command that I have over my job and the more control that I can have in being able to tell the story visually. When I went through high school and getting to make those short films, I think that there was just something so gratifying about that process that I just had to have more. I just had to go deeper. I had to do it on a higher level. And that's ultimately the reason why I kind of decided to go to film school as opposed to acting school. Yeah.
I love this. Let's talk about, I know you've worked with Chris also and you've worked with Steven. Like, what does it look like daily? Like, I want to, because, you know, there's so many worker bees out there that are so used to their like corporate jobs that are just like day in and day out the same thing, and there's really no variation. It's almost like groundhog every day. But in your field of work, it's not like that. So, like, give me, like, from the time you've graduated from school, you know, the ups and downs that actually exist, because I think they don't the audience doesn't understand, most of them, unless they're in Hollywood or in the film business or wherever it is now, because the film business is now all over the United States. Talk to me about what the ups and downs are, because it takes a lot of mental toughness and discipline and consistency to keep doing what you're doing with the ups and downs. So talk to me a little bit about that, you know, the last 10 years, for example, of what that's been like.
Right. Yeah. The last 10 years has been, like you said, ups and downs. There's no way to predict what your career is going to be like. And my sort of development and growth in this film industry has been anything but a straight line or anything but, well, I should say anything but like a linear sort of fashion. It's been up and down and back and forward and all around and questioning and doubting and, oh, maybe I am meant to do this. And because it's like you getting jobs is a large part of that. You just don't really have total control over, because as a cinematographer, people have to hire you. And a lot of times, if you get hired, it's like you're the one out of very many people that have been sort of considered. And it is a very competitive position based on like what level you are. So there are ups and downs. But I mean, the goal is just to expand your network as much as possible and promote yourself as best as you can possibly can. And I guess try to present those qualities that make you unique and that would make people more interested in you. And that's its own part of the job. Like, you know, just sort of going from the technical, the artistic and creative, but also promoting yourself. That's all a part of it. But yeah, the job is a unique one, and it does bring its own unique challenges day to day, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's just crazy because I think you jump from project to project sometimes. While that's good, because I can't imagine doing the same thing over and over again, day in and day out, I think that, you know, the expertise that you gain from project to project, you've worked with different directors, you work with different teams, you're constantly between projects. Talk to me about, like, team building. I mean, how do you go about it? How do you work with the others? On a film, for example, even just within cinematography, because I've got to imagine there's a lot of rotation there and working with different teammates and different directors, so that have different points of view than you. So how does all of that happen? Because I know it's probably way different than in the normal manager-employee relationship that we all think of.
Mm-hmm. Well, to start off, I'll say that let's take your average feature film, right? The average workday in the film industry is actually 12 hours. It's not 8 hours, it's 12. And so you're going to be spending a lot of time with people if you have like a 15, 20, 30 day feature film to shoot. And, you know, a lot of times you're going to be in very close quarters with these people. And so a big part of building your team is pulling together people that you'll be able to spend a lot of time with. And the things that factor into that is, well, a big one is personality, right? Yes. So I'll sort of wind back and sort of break down what my team looks like as a cinematographer. So as a cinematographer, I'm also known as the director of photography. And under me, I have three departments. I have the lighting department, the grip department, as well as the camera department. And all those departments have their own sort of hierarchy of positions. And there's a chain of command. But as the director of photography, I'm at the top of that. So I am the person who has to have the answers and who has to know what we're doing in order to accomplish the visual storytelling so that I can, you know, give that information and inform the camera department, lighting department, and grip department. So I'm making a lot of decisions, and the director and I are discussing a lot of things, and we have to be able to disseminate that instruction and information to a lot of people in a clear and concise way. But back to building the team, yes, you want to have, you know, you want to hire the most skilled people that you can afford as a basis. That's what makes the most sense, obviously, because the more skilled your team, the less you'll have to worry about, are they going to be able to accomplish this? Are they going to be able to accomplish that? But going back to the personality thing, you also want to hire people who you gel with, who you're going to be able to spend a lot of time with, and who are going to have great attitudes and who are going to be team players. I think I could speak for all filmmakers when I say that eventually you're going to go through your career and come across people who don't have the best attitudes, who are a little self-centered, who aren't the best team players, who don't tolerate stress very well, and they kind of take it out on people. And those are the people that you're gonna sort of have a second thought about, like, do I really want to bring this person on? Because negativity and bad attitudes can really set kind of a negative environment, and it can really spread. Especially if it's from someone in a higher up position. If I show up on set as a cinematographer, a director of photography, and I bring a bad attitude and I'm snappy and I'm rude, then that's going to sort of set an uncomfortable atmosphere. And that's not good. So, yes, I want to have the most skilled people, the people who I'm going to be able to gel with and who are going to be able to gel with each other. And if you can get that part right, then your experience working on the project, especially if it's a project where it's heavily demanding, like physically, like let's say you're shooting in a harsh environment or you're just shooting a lot of days, it's going to make it go much more smoothly. Yeah.
I mean, what is a grip department? I think that that's why I don't know what that one is for some reason. I understand lighting and I understand the other one, but what's grip?
Grip is, I would say that grip is support. So grip is involved in like what the lights get mounted on and how they get mounted throughout the set. Grips are involved in supporting the camera. So sort of designing and figuring out and troubleshooting different camera mounting situations, whether the camera has to be mounted to a car, whether the camera has to be mounted to a ceiling, or also grips are involved in moving and putting up set walls. And it may sound like something that's more simple. Nothing could be further from the truth. It's a highly skilled, highly intricate position. And grips are some of the smartest problem solvers that you've ever seen. And I have nothing but utter respect for that position. I came up mostly through camera department. I have grip experience, but I'm not like a highly skilled grip or anything like that. So yeah, it's one of those jobs that when you look at some of the stuff that they accomplish, some of the rigs that they set up, you're just in awe. You're in total awe. You're like, I can never do this. This is why I hire you.
I mean, so, I kind of imagine that some of them are like riggers. Like if you imagine music, the ones that are like hanging and dangling off these massive contraptions to try to get lights and cameras up there to get the best shot and stuff like
Absolutely.
That. And so their skill set is so diverse because they're not just doing whatever or not just, you know, hanging a camera or mounting it. It's like they're hanging from like a cliff and mounting a camera off the side of a cliff somehow or something like that. I probably imagine it's a little safer than that, but I do know that injury and accidents do happen in movies, and there's a lot of moving pieces, and they're always blazing new trails. But I do also understand the complication of probably a job like this, since I didn't know what it was. But now that you've said and described it, I know exactly, can see those individuals running around on sets, at least on the sets I've been on, and anywhere from even in reality TV, you have like people that are running around trying to do that stuff for you sometimes. So help me understand then the orchestration between you and the other departments. So what other departments are there within a film then? Because you talked about the cinematography or director of cinematography, and with the three sort of departments that fall under that. What are the other departments that take place on films?
Yeah, you have the sound department. You have hair, makeup, and wardrobe. You have art department, which is involved with the production designer. So designing the sets, dressing them, making them look like actual locations. You have your, there's of course the AD department, like the assistant director and the other assistant directors. And there's others. Depending on like what type of project it is, but those are a lot of the standard departments.
And I have to imagine that if you're a director of your department, you have to then coordinate with all them, and then the director sort of oversees it all. And I know there's executive producers and stuff like that. So like ultimately who's the boss of the projects, I guess. Is it an executive producer? Is it a director? I think I got to imagine it's the director, but I'm not always 100% sure.
Yeah, I mean, the upper level producers, but the director is definitely the boss when it comes to the creative stuff and actually like accomplishing the actual film when it comes to like telling the story, I would say. So when you're on set, everyone's not looking to the producer for answers as to, okay, what are we doing now? What scene are we doing? How are we shooting it? Everyone's looking to the director. The director is hired for his or her expertise and those unique qualities that make the director a good fit to tell the story. And as a director, you have to know a little bit of everything because, again, you're communicating your vision to all the different departments, and all those different departments are working together in order to accomplish a director's vision. So the more you know as a director, the better director you're going to be.
I love it. I think it's just it's an interesting thing. And as someone in business and an entrepreneur, it's always interesting because I know that different businesses structure things different ways. I'm just always interested because a movie is like a temporary business that's set up to accomplish a task or a project, and then it sort of disappears for the most part. So it's always kind of cool. Let's talk about the acting. And you had mentioned you haven't gotten back in front of the camera yet or stuff like that. Is that still something you want to do? Do you still have an affinity, for lack of a better term, for acting, for that type of thing? Or is the cinematography a stepping stone for that? I mean, ultimately, where are you hoping to go with all of this?
Yeah, I think right now it's making sense to me that the ultimate... I don't know if that's the right word, but what makes sense to me is that down the line, I would actually be a director. Why? Because directing is a good way to actually combine my love of creating visuals and telling stories with acting. But for now, yeah, acting is definitely something that I still want to do because I developed a love for that before I got into like actually making films and wanting to be a filmmaker. So that's never gone away. So there's still a lot of things that, I mean, I was in a film recently that's currently in post-production now. One of my friends cast me in his feature film, but yeah, there's still a lot of stuff that I want to do with acting and a lot of exploration that I want to do with it as well. So, so we'll see what happens over the next few months with that.
I like this a lot. And I know you're working obviously on Foodtopia with us and the stuff that we're working on there. So that's and I totally respect your skill as we did that screen test and saw what you guys do and the amount of time it takes and how many takes it takes and, you know, how many times I foobarred that thing, fucked it all up, and trying to learn what you guys are doing. So it was a great experience for me. So I'd really respect what you do, the patience that you have, because it obviously, if you're coming along and someone's trying to get it right, as Steven says, it just takes more reps, which is something hard for me because I like getting things in like one or two times and mastering it. It's just something that I've always done. But I can understand in this thing, it's not only about the person in front of the camera, it's about the lighting and the situation, and maybe that needs to change or the angle's wrong. And so it's a very interesting thing for me, looking in, and it intrigues me constantly. So I appreciate that. I appreciate what you've done. And I've learned a lot from you in the last 6 months for sure. So I just want the audience to know, like, you're a plethora of knowledge, whether you know it or not, the education that you've given me just in phone calls and conversations and what you do has been hugely important for my growth. Let's talk about like core values and stuff, Noble. Let's talk about like the things that keep you going, what motivates you and inspires you. So, I mean, the first part is like, what are sort of the core values you live by, and how do you keep yourself inspired and motivated to keep going every day?
Oh, I love that question. Yeah, I love that question. So, core values. I guess what I live by is, you know, and this is something that I think we've all heard, but something that my mom instilled into us is that, you know, treat others how you want to be treated. And that's something that I carry with me wherever I go. I'm motivated to be friendly with everyone and to be sort of peaceful with everybody. I don't want to cause any problems. And I don't want to treat anyone rudely or without respect. So I think having respect for others as fellow human beings is very important in living a peaceable life in, on this planet. And that's something that I tend to do wherever I go, whether I'm just stopping by a restaurant and, you know, with an interaction with the waiter, or whether I'm on a film set with the people that I'm working with, or the person that's doing my taxes, or the person that is, you know, washing my car, like whoever. Like I have just respect for everyone that I meet. So that's one. Another thing that I would say is I like sort of being helpful to people and being compassionate and understanding, I think is important when dealing with people. A quality that a lot of folks will say that I have a lot of is patience. Like I've always been a very patient, caring and compassionate person because I'm really good at putting myself in other people's shoes. I'm really good at empathizing with people. And sometimes it's to a fault because I've definitely been a little too, I guess, careful when it comes to pleasing people and worrying about how other people feel. I've really had that to a fault. I think I'm learning to really manage that now, but it's very easy for me to be kind of compassionate and really connecting with what might this person be feeling in this particular moment. So yeah, I think compassion is another one. And, you know, I just try to accomplish those things. Like a lot of that really influences me in the different things that I do. And I think those are the most important core values to me that I can think of right now. And you mentioned something else after that.
What keeps you motivated and inspired every day?
What keeps me motivated and inspired? That's interesting because I think that's not something that happens automatically, you know, depending on how we're doing in life and the things that we're going through. I think that every day that we wake up, we have to find how we're going to motivate ourselves and how we're going to, like, we have to seek inspiration, I guess. And for me, I think inspiration comes from largely from like music and from different art forms, from nature. And I listen to music all the time. I'm always humming something. I'm always singing something and just immersing myself in music, in different melodies, in different harmonies, and just sort of exploring that world has actually been the source of a lot of inspiration for me throughout my entire life. And it's, and music is extremely important to me. And I don't know who I would be, where I would be without it. I'm telling you. So every time I drive, it's like I'm having my own concerts in the car. Yeah. Because it's just, I gotta have it. It's like, when I think about it, music is like a part of my DNA, it feels like. And I have my dad to thank for that, because he was someone who really sort of carved out my foundation, or a lot of my foundation of what I enjoy musically to this day. And as I mentioned, nature, like, I'm sitting in my car right now talking to you because it's kind of a quiet place. And right through my windshield, I'm seeing this bright sky that's kind of permeating through these green leaves in the trees. And I'm seeing like the light shining through the leaves, and it's creating this sort of interesting dapple effect on the wall here. And it's just so beautiful the way that nature works, and it just exists, and how we can coexist with it. And whenever I'm feeling a little trapped or a little down, I just take a walk outside and connect with nature and be like, oh yeah, there's a lot more. There's a lot more going on than my little struggles in my little world. So yeah, I would say music and nature are probably two of the biggest motivators and inspiration for me.
I agree with you, and it's interesting that you say that, because Deborah, she used to say, and the audience knows who she is, and from the other podcasts and stuff like that, I'm sure, but she always used to look at the mountains in Denver and be like, whatever's going on with me, it's insignificant, look what nature's doing. And and I, you know, it takes me a long time, especially as an entrepreneur, where you're always trying to find balance, what is out of your control and what's in your control. It's almost the serenity prayer always. And for the audience who doesn't know that, that's God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And yes, it's exactly what we're talking about. What do we need to manipulate and make better as humans, and what don't we? What do we just need to leave alone? And I think that's the toughest thing. That's the whole challenge of free will and aligning our will with God's will, or our plan with God's plan. But I agree with you. Nature is so beautiful if we just sit and look at it. And it's interesting we talked about this, because I just watched this thing on the news, and I never watch the news, honestly. So why I was watching it today, I don't know. But it's about how in all the national parks, people are now going beyond what's normal. They're like taking selfies with the bison in Yellowstone. There's a lady who dipped her legs and feet in a boiling geyser because she thought it would be good for her Instagram. Of course, she got burned badly. Okay. And a guy who like wanted, who picked up a bison and carried it over so his family, a baby bison, so this family could have pictures. But people don't realize when humans touch animals and their babies, the herd rejects it. So that baby was rejected by the herd, now rejected by his mother. I know that's crazy for us to believe, because if some other human touched our kid, we wouldn't reject our kid. However, nature does. Why? Because of this simple fact, disease. Okay? Disease that could spread and kill the whole herd, that could be passed from a human to an animal. Okay? Or another animal to an animal. It's why. It's why, you know, bison and cows, they don't get along. There's diseases there that transpire between each one that'll kill them both eventually, potentially. Okay? So I think that there's things that we just need to leave alone and stay at a distance. And we don't understand our impact in it. And this is not part of what Noble is talking about, but I felt like God was speaking through me, and why I watched this show and what you just said in nature, in leaving it alone and being able to enjoy it and take pictures and film it at distance, I think is important. Some things are just meant to be. For example, humans don't need to interfere, but we feel the need to all the time. So I like this a lot. One of the things I'm going to say is, like, I relate to the music thing. I was probably in seventh grade when Dr. Dre's Chronic album came out. It's one of the, and I'd heard other hip hop music and rap music before that, and Run DMC, but it left such an impact on me. And I know it's classified as gangster rap, And everyone's like, oh, you know, whatever. And what are they saying? But all I heard in it was inspiration, motivation, and the entrepreneurial dream. And I was already an entrepreneur well on my way by 12 years old and running my lawn mowing and field mowing stuff and making money on the side and working on my parents' farm and others' farms to try to make ends meet, quote unquote, because I had things I wanted, like video games and stuff like that back then, or to go play soccer in Europe and needed money for that. And while my parents helped with a lot of things, I also knew that it was the things that I wanted. It was easier for me to get them without having to ask if I had money. And it was freedom and independence that it gave me. But I still listen to music a lot. It's still my inspiration, my motivation. It's one of the things that in my lowest moments, which I've had a lot of them, particularly recently, unfortunately, or fortunately, because I've grown from them, where the music, it's rattling the windows. You know, it's like I'm singing at the top of my lungs because I do like to sing. I probably like embarrassingly say that. But it's not something I've come to full terms with, even though I've done it in my life and have attempted it and sung with friends and things that you and I talked about before this in that venture. And I enjoy it more than anything in this world. But I do stay, it is an inspiration. It brings me out of myself. And it's almost like I don't really know how to deal with that gift. And I don't know if it's a gift or not, because I don't even know if I really sing well. But it's like a gift that music plays for me and through me. The inspiration, the way it talks to me, the way I use it to pump myself up if I'm giving a keynote speech right now or going to do an event or having to get on a podcast. Like some days I just don't want to record 6 podcasts in a day. And some days I just don't want to learn a new skill, because I'm trying to learn a lot of new skills right now in food, like learning donuts, learning how grocery stores work, learning how the delivery and food game works, learning how pizzas work, because I don't have experience in those things. But I'm trying to be a well-rounded human, and I'm seeking a lot of discomfort, and I'm seeking a lot of humbling, weirdly. I am purposely and intentionally humbling myself right now. I don't know why, but it's like I have this thing inside of me that I need to be at the bottom everywhere I can to learn those skills and understand the perspective of all the individuals out there that are starting at the bottom, that are making the world work by being at quote unquote the bottom. And I don't mean that derogatorily. I just mean it that every business has a bottom and top. Every industry has a bottom and top that you can, you know, and I say bottom and top because you can work your way up. Necessarily, I don't necessarily see it as someone's above someone else or below someone else. I'm just referring to it as gaining skill set. And so, like, I feel that that's something, you know, we're talking about here, which is that experience. And you touched upon it a little bit, like the Disney, the high school experience, the ups and downs that you've experienced in the last 10 years, which is you have to keep working at it. You have to know what you don't know. You have to accept that you're never going to be the smartest in the room, even though you think so. There's always to learn from people. And like, you know, there's always skills that you're never going to be good at, or you're never going to learn, or there's going to be people that are better problem solvers or solution or lawyers that you never could read a legal document, for example. You know, some people would call them the necessary evil, but it's, you know, they've saved my ass numerous times. Can't even explain it. But so I really appreciate Noble, and the music thing I think is so key, because one of the things that it is, as in film and being a director, you've got to tie the music, the emotion, the acting, and the actual photography and videography into what you're doing. So it's like an orchestration that I feel is done so well. And if you know it, and what I've noticed about you in the time we work together is that you are actually visualizing it, what the camera's going to see before it ever happens. You're able to deconstruct that in your mind and put the pieces back together, so you identify all the pieces, which is something I have, you know, I probably could think about it and do it, but nowhere near the extent that your expertise, that your mind, that the way you think does. I mean, even talking about the trees and the way the light shines through the leaves and the words you use and the way you described it feels to me like I'm seeing it through a video. You know, I'm seeing it on TV. I'm seeing it in a movie theater. So just by the sheer nature of the way your mind works, it's incredible. And I hope the audience can appreciate that as well, because I think one of the things I'm really trying to do with this podcast and the guests and the entrepreneurs that come on here is really start to give everyone different viewpoints beyond food, like my other shows. Like this goes, and my leadership one too, where I'm trying to give viewpoint on a more global scale and give people understanding and acceptance and tolerance and understand the beauty that we're all different and we all contribute to this world differently and have different hardships. Each one of us, we all have hardships. We all get toothaches. We all have stitches here and there. Like, mm-hmm. So to say that we're different or to focus on those differences in a bad way seems absurd to me when those differences are the very things that make teams and teams work. That's also why I asked you the question of how does a film work? What are all the pieces? Because we all have unique talents. We all have unique things. Okay, and when we live by personalities, which is all of the differences in a bad way, and not our principles, which are the things we live by, and then understand that those principles, we need differences so we can execute a good life and have the support to make sure those principles last legacies or however, or our vision gets told in a film or our ideas are actually put on paper. I couldn't do it by myself. Like, I'm not a person, but through Steven, through Chris Black, Stephen DeKemper, just so everyone knows who we're talking about, Chris Black and you, and now, you know, some other members we're trying to bring on the team down in Nashville, Stuart Deming and Aaron Pennington. You know, you guys are able to take something that I visioned in a Foodtopia and an idea that we had, and I proposed to a group. And now, you know, the idea, they love the idea, but I couldn't make it happen without you guys. And the fact that we've done what we've done, I could have never imagined we accomplished what we accomplished already. It to me, it was just like a pie in the sky thing. Like, this is just not in my field. I don't have any expertise in this other than knowing a lot about food and business. So how do I do this? But through you guys, we've been able to accomplish that. So I think that's really cool, and appreciate your skill set.
Well, that's... That couldn't have been said any better, Justin. And I agree with everything you're saying. And hopefully what we've already done is only the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. So Noble, as we start to wrap things up here, I'm definitely going to have you back on the show because I have a lot of other questions and things I want to go through. So we'll coordinate that, especially since we both have some time in July, a little bit of a lull period for both of us. Maybe we can get back on and do another show if that's cool with you.
Sure, I would love to.
And before we get off, though, is there anything you want to add in, anything you want to say that maybe I didn't cover that you would like the audience to know? Or if anyone is trying to get into cinematography or into film or acting, do you have anything that you wish you knew back then that you know now, for example?
Two things come up to my mind right now. And by the way, I have to say that this episode was completely unprepped. There were no prep questions. There were no like pre-interview. So this is all fully in the moment, and I appreciate that dynamic. And it's been really thrilling and amazing to like interact with you in this way, Justin. But just wrapping it out, what I would say is, number one, it's gonna be okay. It's not that serious. And I'm talking about like those two phrases. It's not that serious. It's going to be okay. Being important for every area of my life. Because I can kind of get very into my mind, into my thoughts, into worrying, into overanalyzing and overthinking. And what if, but just calm down. It's going to be okay. It's not that serious. That's, if I can go back in time and tell my younger self that, that's what I would say. And number two, something in life that's been really important for me were the discoveries and the truths that I sort of absorbed, adopted during that first big lockdown period, spurred on by the pandemic, which is you have to know as an artist, knowing who you are, knowing, I guess, the essence of what makes you tick, of what makes you unique, your own idiosyncrasies, your flaws, all the little ingredients that make up you and make you unique and distinct, is the most important thing when it comes to your storytelling, when it comes to your art. That is the most important thing. Everything that has gone into making you who you are, from your upbringing to your experiences to who your friends are to the people you've been educated by to the books you've read to your worldview to the things that you're interested in, and all of that that goes into building the person who you are, is what makes your art so unique, and what makes your art the only art that could come from a person like you. And knowing that and acknowledging that and owning that and leaning into that as much as you possibly can is what is going to make your art as profound and as truthful as it could possibly be. Yes, there are times where we just have to do something a certain way because a client wants it that way, or depending on what area we are in, sort of like for example, marketing or advertising. Yes, we have to play into trends, and we can't just introduce everything exactly how we want it because we have to play into that trend in order to sell a product. I get that. But at a foundational level, what's really transformed my life is that embrace, that acceptance, that realization, and that ownership of everything that makes me who I am, leaning into that and never doing away with that, because that is the thing that's going to make my art as truthful as it possibly as it possibly can be. And when my art is at its most truthful, then like I can just rest knowing that, wow, I gave it my all, and at least I can say that I did it in a way that made sense for me. Like when I get hired as a cinematographer, I get hired for what I can bring to the table. And that's something that I've really come to terms with in the last couple of years. It's like, I'm not the most, you know, it's like, I'm not going to be right for every single project. But when the director or producer sees something in my work, sees something in me, that makes them consider me for this project, then you better believe that I'm going to bring all of me unashamedly and unapologetically. So just know who you are, love who you are, and lean into that in whatever you're doing.
I love it. And I agree with you. And I found this recently as I've gone through a little bit of a health scare and some really downward parts of my life, that when I'm off, I deliver not great things. And I know that's crazy, but it really, in my life, I never realized how our mindset and our mood could actually be translated in the little things that we do until recently. As I said, I've humbled myself and I've sort of have done these things because it reflects, you know, whether making pizza, whether I'm coaching someone for an event to be a better human, whether I'm consulting, whether I'm making pizza, whether I'm, you know, trying to figure out the delivery game. My attitude and my perspective and my willingness to blame others for things that are my fault, or I take on things that I should be doing better and I'm disgruntled, which I've totally can understand because there's a lot of things that I'm doing. And it's an interesting, humbling experience. I have an MBA. I, you know, was part of a company and built over 33 companies over 24 years, most of them very successful. And, you know, there were some failures there, don't get me wrong. But what is interesting to me is the conversations that I'm having to have with myself. The conversations that are, you know, you at any given moment, you aren't who you think you are, you know? You really have to identify who you are at your core, you know? Mm. And that's so hard for humans to do. We go to college, we have all this experience, we sort of jump up the corporate ladder, and we don't understand what anyone has, like if they're working in fast food, or what it's like to actually struggle to even buy a car or an apartment, and how little and how far or how little distance, I should say, money goes, or how far you can get without money, which is not very far. And I'm not saying to focus on money. However, I'm saying it really gives perspective to how hard people work for how little versus how little people work for how much in the world. And and I will say this. One of the things that I found is hard work, humbling ourselves, willing to do the work, and giving our best foot forward, like you talked about, it does help us understand who we are. What are we willing to do? Are we tough enough mentally, physically, spiritually to survive life? You know, and yeah. I think one of the things that you said was, you know, it's just temporary, right? I'll get through this. And sometimes life can feel so hard we get stuck in the situation. And while it's good to sit in it for a little bit and grow from it and not just move right through it, I do think that we have the ability to humble ourselves in those situations and learn from it and realize and take ownership of what our part is and maybe how we contributed to that negative activity or effect or response or whatever. I'm not saying it's always 100% our fault, but I can't go identifying fault for someone else or someone else did something wrong. That's theirs to fix. Mine to fix is my own. And so, you know, I'm getting on this weird little tangent here, but I think that most of us tend to avoid the things that are harmful, that are hurtful, that are emotionally hard, and therefore we don't grow ourselves, to your point. We don't get to know what makes us special. We don't get to know what makes us different. And because of fear and insecurities, we tend to try to fit in versus like trying to explore who we are and find belonging just for who we are. And that translates into so much. And as artists, I agree with you. The artist that's holding back something is usually the one who hasn't faced a fear yet or needs to embrace this really dark side of them. Okay, I know I have darkness. Okay, I have immense darkness. And if you watch me go do CrossFit and you see them turn on the workout of the day and then hit the music, we talked about music earlier, there is a darkness I go to that keeps me working harder than probably anyone in the room. Okay, and they may lift more and they may run harder or they will do whatever, but I guarantee my consistency and persistence is most of the time greater than anyone else's. I will not stop until I am dead on the ground, breathing to the point of almost vomiting. Because why? Because I cannot imagine living my life not getting to know myself, not growing and not pushing myself to the limits, because I learn the most about myself there. I also learn the most about myself when I have nothing to do, which is a scary thing because that's not been really part of my life the last 43 years until now, where I actually have time on my hands, and it's a freaking scary place. And I understand now why people say never explore your brain on your own. Like at some point, if you're ruminating a lot, bring in a friend into your brain and help and walk through your thoughts, because it can be a dangerous place and we can let fears turn into Goliath. And we need the proverbial David to come into our brain and help us shoot down that monster we're creating and fear. And lastly, I will say this. So many people live life unfulfilled and go to their deathbed, which I've discovered doing long-term care homes and food for many, many years, decades. And one of the things I always hear people talking about is I wish I would have done more with my life. You know, I wish I would have done things differently. I wish I would have sang and I never did it, you know, and I just think that that's what we're talking about here. You really need to see what makes you unique and what seeds have been planted in you by God that you need to water and grow on your own. He plants seeds That's his will. It's our will that grows them, you know, especially if we do it positively. And lastly, I will say this. We always talk about, you know, there's a lot of sins and whatever else we talk about. Those are results of spiritual maladies or things like that. And those spiritual maladies come from man-made things, man-made desires, man-made coveting. You know, if we really stay in aligning our plan with God and his will and positivity and growing the world around us, the animals, the plants, the humans, there is a lot of fulfillment in that. And it's a scary place because the more I do it, the scarier it becomes for me that I can't even imagine humans that don't want to grow, that are so comfortable that they do, and so scared of discomfort and growth that they will not move forward. And I get it. It's instinctual and I get it, how it related to our ancestry, but it weirdly freaks me out. It gives me almost a panic attack when I'm around someone that just refuses to grow or refuses to learn and move forward, that's so stubborn and so in their ways that they can't look at things intelligently. And what I mean by intelligence, it's the ability to learn and change your own mind. Intelligence isn't something, knowledge that you spew on other people. It's a false fact. Okay, knowledge, I gain it, I help other people with it, but intelligence is the ability to collect information and become, use that knowledge to change my own point of view for the better. So, Noble, I really appreciate you coming on, listening to me babble on forever there. And this was really, I agree with you, I forgot to give you the prep questions. So that was kind of cool. I didn't even think I did that. I'm normally right on my game, but that worked out well. I'll give you the prep questions for part two for sure, so we can have a little bit of that. But excellent. You're a cool dude, man. And I'm really blessed to have you in my life. And I am grateful. The things that your positive energy and your spirituality that you pass on to me and the growth that you've given me. So I just want to say that first and foremost. And then second, thank you for your time and doing this today for sure.
Justin, thank you as well. And I'm super grateful that you brought me onto the show. And I just want to thank all your listeners as well. Yeah, it's been super fun. I've learned a lot from you. I think you should be a motivational speaker or a preacher or something, because man, you got, it's like I'm making mental notes of all your little key phrases that you've used. Like, oh wow, that's a good one. I'm gonna use that. But yeah, I would love to do it again. Just let me know.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I appreciate the confidence and the belief in me for sure, and I believe in you as well. Definitely in God's purpose that he has given you and telling stories for other people, like what we're doing here and the positivity we're about to spread across the world through Foodtopia and the experience and the expertise and the education we're about to give everyone and exposure because the world needs it. You know, we need to see how the world really works through food and how it can help regenerate our planet and the humans on it and give us hope for the future. Just by the way we eat and consume food. So it's a lot more there than just eating at a restaurant and being a foodie out there, guys. It's so much more complicated than that, than glorifying food over social media. So there's a lot more glorifying in food. I think that's why you say, I pray, or when we have food, God is great, God is good, thank you for this food, amen, because we don't realize the nutrients, what it's been put on this earth here for us to do and how responsible we are over it. So again, I'm saying a lot of sorry about that, and I'll talk to you guys soon. I have a lot on my mind, and Noble, you really sparked a lot of creativity in me, so my mind's going 1,000 miles an hour right now.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, no kidding. I love it, and it's just one of those things where your brain pauses and you need a filler word, as everyone talks about, and getting rid of them, but my mind's working so fast that I'm needing a lot of filler words in there.
It's good. Channel it.
Yeah, channel exactly. It. Thank you, everyone, for listening in. I appreciate you guys. I love you guys in the audience. You know, the support that you guys have showered upon me across the world has been phenomenal and humbling. I always feel like I'm still not doing enough, which is funny because we are in 137 countries with Justin the Food Entrepreneurs podcast. And it's just weird. I mean, there's only almost 200 countries in the world. So it's just a very humbling experience. Yet I always feel like I'm not doing enough or not making enough impact or enough influence. But I guess that's just part of what keeps me going and inspiring me every day, is I want to make sure that I maximize the gift that I've given or that I have, and the gift that I have for wanting people to grow and wanting them to have positive, effective lives in the world. Thanks again, Noble. Thanks again, audience. If you guys want to find us, you can find me on Instagram at Justin Bizarro, and you can find us on Spotify or wherever else you grow yourself through podcasts. And we're out.